also have, you know, perspectives of people interpreting what I'm saying is really helpful. So I do really appreciate it. And I'm definitely going to, you know, have some of these, you know, action items in mind as I kind of hop on my next call after this. It'll be great.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 45 of Business Therapy, the show where every week, Jonathan and I meet live with professionals looking to get mindful advice on their business problems. Today on the show, we have another Jonathan, actually. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Thank you very much. Glad to be on it.
Awesome. So why don't we start by you telling us a little bit more about yourself, your business, and the challenge you wanted to talk about today?
Sure. Yeah. Well, once again, I appreciate you, you know, allowing me to be on the show. I think it's great what you're doing. You know, there were a lot of different topics in an early stage startup that we could think to bring up. One that was, you know, particularly close to my heart was being a non-technical founder in a deep technology company. Obviously, every startup has a number of different roles that need to be filled, but there is a lot of overlap between them. And so really learning and understanding how to navigate you know, the communication between a highly technical team when you yourself maybe can't contribute to certain aspects of the development of the team. So I think that's a, you know, something I'm working on. I certainly don't have advice to give yet, but would love to learn more and just, you know, get everyone's feedback.
Awesome. Yeah. And before we dive right in, Jonathan, we'd really appreciate, why don't you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and the company, if you could, just to anchor us.
Absolutely. So I'm a co-founder of a company, Hoth Intelligence. We are an augmented reality medical device company. So just to kind of give the, you know, elevator pitch one-liner, there are procedures done in hospitals, and it's really shocking, where a physician, a surgeon might insert a needle, a catheter, some sort of instrument into your body, let's say the brain, effectively doing it blindly, not knowing where their target is, not knowing where the instrument or the needle is going. And for reasons I don't have to get into, there is no technology available to assist with this process. And so what we do is we create technology using augmented reality that allows that provider to see through and into the patient as they do the procedure. So now they can see their target, they can see where their instrument's going, and it just allows for much safer, more accurate procedures.
I'm curious, Jonathan, is it an imaging or is it some other, or like what's the underlying, if you can share, technology?
Yeah, absolutely. So just augmented reality is still a pretty new area. So most people actually don't know what it is. You know, most people think of virtual reality as you're, you know, immersed in this zombie game and you're running around. Augmented reality, what it does is it superimposes virtual content, so like a 3D hologram, onto the real world. So our company spans a few different areas. There's medical imaging analysis and reconstruction. So taking, you know, let's say brain scans and reconstructing them into holograms and 3D objects. And then there's the augmented reality side. And effectively what that means is, like I just mentioned, superimposing those 3D holograms onto the environment, in this case, onto the patient. And so now when you're looking at them, you don't just see, you know, what you and I are seeing right now looking at each other, but I would actually be able to see through and into your head, you know, see your brain, see the vessels, or, you know, through and into your chest, the underlying structures.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's great. And like, before we jump into more of a general topic about the technical versus non-technical folks in a company, I guess maybe a little more about your backstory would be helpful, about how you came in as the non-technical founder and kind of where, how you find yourself in this venture. What's a little bit of the backstory there?
Of course. So my background, kind of going in no particular order, I have a background in medicine and research through an MD PhD. I, you know, co-founded this company with Tyler, who's our CEO. We met at Swarthmore College as undergrads. We were close friends. We worked on a number of different ventures, all unsuccessful, you know, but just excited to kind of, you know, find a problem, work on a solution, and learn from it. And he also pursued an MD PhD, and we stayed in touch over the years, given that we were on similar track career paths. And, you know, he called me up, you know, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and said, hey, you know, I'm thinking about working on this thing. I've been playing around with some of the code. I've got a little bit going, but still really, you know, starting it from the ground up. Do you want to get involved? And at first I said, sure, you know, this will be something I'll do, you know, a couple hours a week, help out. And I think credit to the technology, credit to Tyler, who's just a phenomenal leader as well. You know, I was hooked, and now I found myself doing, you know, 70 hours a week, and, you know, now I'm full time at the company. And so, you know, Tyler was the one who started to think about, you know, use cases of augmented reality. And then together with our medical backgrounds, we saw some real pain points and problems where our technology can, you know, be a true solution. And so we've just spent time building technology, speaking to potential users, forming partnerships, and, you know, it's been growing really beautifully.
Great. And then one more background question, just to indulge me, the Hoth reference. Could you just give us a little more background on the name and where it came from?
Of course. You know, we're a bunch of Star Wars nerds. Some of us are really big Star Wars nerds. Like, we can't publish pictures of our offices or our, you know, our garages. But Hoth is a planet in Star Wars, icy planet in Star Wars. And Tyler thought of the name because, really, two combinations. He loves Star Wars and he loves winter. There wasn't some, you know, crazy, you know, experience that led to the name, but it sounds awesome and it fits, you know, our interests. And I think the last interest it fits is, you know, the idea of, you know, space and, you know, cutting edge technologies being really at the, you know, the front end of really any industry. And so it's been our name ever since, and it's actually really shaped a lot of the you know, team members that we've been able to bring on, because there's just, you know, instant gravitation to, you know, a company that's willing to, you know, name themselves after Star Wars.
Yeah, I think it's great. That's why I just wanted to comment on it, because I'm a Star Wars fan. I don't think I could pretend I'm a huge Star Wars nerd. I don't think I have that level of knowledge, but I appreciate it when people also put some of that personal flavor into a company. I think it makes it more authentic. So I just wanted to comment that I really appreciate that.
And I have to admit to reading the books as well as seeing all the movies. So
awesome. Well, we got to have a conversation offline as well.
For sure.
Could also, where is the company in its journey right now? Like, what's the next big thing? Or
yep. So right now, It's a number of things, as you can imagine. You know, we have a great product right now. We have partnerships with, you know, physicians who are testing this in the appropriate settings, you know, based on what we're allowed to do with FDA regulation. And so really the big thing is, you know, we've established the technology, we're expanding it, improving it, testing it, and validating the clinical efficacy of it. And while we're doing that, we're working through, you know, things like the FDA clearance process, such that, you know, we demonstrate the value, we demonstrate the efficacy, we get cleared for FDA, and then we can really commercialize and scale the company as we, you know, form partnerships and sell into other hospitals. So I'd say, just to kind of summarize, it's optimizing technology further and working with a smaller set of institutions to really prove out and validate the technology.
Excellent. And why do you feel it's a challenge that you're non-technical? I mean, you're PhD, MD. Clearly, the product is in that market. Like, how does this tension coming up?
Sure. You know, it's not as much a challenge. It's more of me wanting to learn how I can contribute in other ways. Of course, I can. There's a ton of work I'm doing. I could stay busy and never deal with the, you know, the engineering side ever. There's FDA clearance, there's forming partnerships, there's sales, all of that. But especially as the co-founder, you not only want to, you know, be aware and understand what's happening on the technical side, but because you know that's such a driving force in the company, really creating a phenomenal product, I find myself struggling somewhat to support them in other ways than, you know, my normal roles in the company, which are things like FDA clearance. And to kind of define that further is a little difficult, because once again, they're doing highly technical things. I'm not asking them to let me, you know, code or work on the, you know, work on any of the specific development, but still there are ways I would imagine that I can support them. And so some things I do is, you know, I do a lot of research for them, especially when you're developing brand new technology. There isn't really like a published library of code that can tell, you know, that you can just copy and paste. It's all pretty much being developed from scratch. And so a lot of that requires, you know, accessing and reviewing the literature, which I can do well because I have, you know, I have a science background, and really interpreting, you know, other studies, and then sort of relaying that and digesting that and passing it on to the team. That's just one example, but it's really, you know, finding ways to, you know, support them as best as possible. And I'm still trying to, you know, figure that out.
Got it. There's certainly no shortage of startups or technical startups, including where there's no co-founder, just a founder who is highly successful without having a technology background, obviously. And there's no shortage of advice on, you know, focusing on product or focusing on, you know, different areas. But I think where we're going to take it a little bit more is this distinction between you and the technical people in the company versus you and the company, or the idea of the company has objectives as a group, and where the distinction of technology or not technology is forming in your head. Like, how is that seeing that dynamic versus just the organizational needs? So I don't know if you could see the two as a little bit distinct.
Well, and to be honest, I absolutely see what you're referring to, and it's challenging to actually make that distinction, just because we are a small company and everyone is playing each other's role. Like, for example, our engineers are salesmen at times. They're not necessarily good at it. I'm not saying I am either, but, you know, they have to fill in that role. And so, you know, you're absolutely right. There are definitely roles outside of direct development that are critical that I play that further, you know, the mission of the company. And so, like, the example I used was, you know, FDA clearance. That is a huge component of the company. All risk in our company comes down to, you know, being FDA cleared. And that is my main focus. But then at the same time, you know, how do you get FDA cleared? Well, the engineers have to make something that's highly accurate. How do they make something that's highly accurate? A myriad of different ways. And so I'm trying to insert myself into, you know, into their day to day in a way, to maybe speed up that process, to maybe make it more efficient. You know, Tyler, my co-founder, he is leading the development team, you know, mostly by himself with some support, but he's also the CEO of our company. And that's, you know, that's a lot on, you know, one person, you know, to have the fiduciary interests of the company, to have the technical interests of the company, and just overall the kind of the mission of the company in mind. And so maybe just to add one more layer to what you said is, you know, just general supporting, you know, like my co-founder, supporting the guy who's supporting the, you know, the technical team.
Yeah. And I would ask, you know, even maybe going the other way for a second, like when we talk, because like Jonathan's pointing out and what we're talking about here is the line between technical and non-technical can be a bit ambiguous or subjective, especially in a company the size that you are. So when we really diving into the tension you're feeling, I kind of want to relate it for a second to more to what you're feeling, where, because especially when you open the episode by saying you're working more than a full-time week, and like you said, you've got critical components in your wheelhouse that you're helping the company with, I guess, where are you feeling tension that there might be this sense of not being able to do enough, or like you said, maybe not being able to understand enough, but where do you feel like that understanding is causing the sense of deficiency or lack or like wants? Because I think, and I just want to understand that tension within you personally a little bit more first.
Yeah. So I think largely it's comes down to, you don't know what you don't know. And so, you know, I know there's ways to support this team, but I, you know, maybe it starts with just proper communication with the engineering team to find out, you know, what are your needs? What are your ancillary needs that might not need to be your pure focus, and finding ways to insert myself and assist in that capacity. You know, I'm imagining things I can do, but at the end of the day, I have to really understand, you know, where there are gaps in their process that I could fill. And once again, it's not really about you know, technical, non-technical. It's about, you know, kind of organization, communication between between the technical and non-technical team. Because I'm that person. I'm the other guy right now in the company that's not involved in the technical team. And so I don't think I know exactly, you know, where I can fill that role. And so that might just come down to communication. Maybe I'm not explaining it as well as, you know, as I could, because it really is nebulous to me at the moment.
I think you're explaining it very well. And we've seen this tension many times, and it's not always just because of technology, non-technology. It's just a general sense of other activity people are doing and how can I contribute to that? And I think what I'm trying to get at is the idea that it's not you versus, and I don't want to say you're saying versus, but like you distinct from everybody else, even though there seems to be a distinction from technology, it's all the things the entity needs to be doing. And anyone could be looking back and seeing that. Yeah. And so I think it's just an orientation shift away from seeing a distinction between yourself, although I know it's readily apparent, and just thinking it's irrelevant whether or not technology is primary area that will help achieve your purpose. The goal is the purpose of the company. So it's to help physicians be able to do better surgery or et cetera. And orienting around that, the technology is a component of it, a major component, no doubt, of course. But if it's always thinking about how to help someone else versus the entity, and I know you want to help the entity, the challenge is that you're constrained by whatever they think they need as opposed to what the entity might need. So I'm just suggesting a little bit of a perspective shift and not seeing that distinguishing area as necessarily a liability, but potentially the way that the company is successful, because a lot of times the technology is great and the market just can't absorb it. You have a constraint of the FDA, but you could imagine a lot of, you know, doctors trusting it or, you know, et cetera.
No, I completely agree. And at the same time though, another, you know, reason I would want to kind of integrate more closely with the tech team is because really kind of what you're saying, it will support me in the reverse direction to be able to carry out. So, you know, as I write submissions to FDA, as I communicate with our FDA legal team, as I, you know, pitch this technology to a new surgeon, you know, being more attuned with the, you know, really what's happening in the back room and really what's happening, you know, in development, you know, to the capacity to update, you know, a potential customer, you know, a week later saying, hey, we hit this big milestone and here's what went into it, is really powerful. And I think, as you mentioned, does push the, you know, the overall mission forward, which is supporting, you know, larger aspects of the company, like FDA clearance, like sales. And so a goal of mine would be, you know, by supporting them and having meaningful contributions to the technology team, I also receive the benefit as well of, you know, not only being able to speak their language better, but understanding what they're going through and what they're doing so that I can translate that to someone who understands it even less than me.
Yeah, but that process is the value. So if you were another technology person, you may not be able to contribute at that level. So I'm suggesting not seeing anything as a liability or you as different, but as all the components that are necessary to make this entity successful.
Yeah. I agree. I don't think I view it as a liability. Sorry, Sam.
No, go ahead, Jonathan, please.
I was just gonna say, you're absolutely right. And I don't really view it as a liability. It's more just, and as you both know, you want to do everything and anything for your company. And sure, as things grow and develop more, you might still have that same attitude, but realize that you can delegate and you know, allow other people to fill in some of those roles. But you know, at this stage, that's another element, just kind of overcoming that. I want to, you know, do it. You want it so bad that you're just willing to do whatever it takes to succeed.
100%. Say, oh, I thought Sam was gonna interject. So that's the you know, contributing and the entity achieving its objectives. What do you like doing? What do you want to do? So forget about like what other people might need done. but what activity do you, you know, enjoy doing?
I mean, to be honest, the ever since we started this company, it's pushed me farther and farther away from what my original career path was, which was medicine and research. Wonderful. You know, my wife's a doctor. I think it's an incredible career, but I just really, my favorite part about all this is not even the product we're building, not even the problem or solution, the problem we're solving, which I care about very deeply, is sort of the wins and losses you have with, you know, your team, especially your co-founder. I mean, we have had some like crazy exhilarating moments, things as simple as, you know, you're waiting to get, you know, see if you're selected for a, you know, to win a pitch competition, and there's one slot left and you happen to be the last name called, like little things like that, you know, you just remember. And so I think to kind of more concretely answer your question, I want to be, you know, creating vision with Tyler, my co-founder. But I want to do it in a very organized and meaningful way. So I'm a scientist. So I want to have done my research on the problem. I will have wanted to properly test and troubleshoot, not just the technology, but, you know, just simple concepts and ideas with users. And so I like the minutia of understanding problems really deeply and then going through a very laborious process to solve them. Now, I think where Tyler and I balance each other out nicely is he, as the CEO, has to think about pushing things forward and moving things as quickly as possible. So whereas I'm the guy who might get bogged down in, you know, one minor thing, he's the guy who's saying, it's okay, you know, nothing's going to be perfect. Let's just get this in front of these physicians. Let's learn from them. You know, they're not going to kick us out of the room. You know, they support new technology and you know, largely kind of moves the company forward. So it's a nice balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think given the personality that you're talking about too, and sort of the conversation up to this point, the technical, non-technical, you talked about the communication, and it's really the tension is a lot coming from the knowing. Like you could say technical, and I could just replace it with knowing and not knowing.
Yeah.
If you think about it for a second there. And like this will become like in the modern times, this will become a gulf that more people increasingly have to navigate, because like you said, things are very technical. But technical can be what you're doing in the FDA process or any other functions that you have could be beyond, like technical beyond what the technical team knows. And they could be saying the same thing in the background. So what you're pointing at really is that communication issue. But beyond the communication, it's really what should you know at any given time? And that's more of a broader question that I think people struggle with. And I think you, especially with the research-oriented personality and that scientific rigor that you've cultivated over the course of your career, it's this idea that when you know there's something you don't know, or even you're aware of it, you want to chase it. You want to interrogate it, and you want to feel like you can command that data so you can make good decisions. But part of the challenging part of business, I guess, and I'd say life in general, is that you can never know everything and you will never know. And your job is not to know, but you got to remember that your job is to do what for the company? Your job, and this is sort of what Jonathan was saying earlier, I guess with two Jonathans, I probably should say which Jonathan. I guess this is what Jonathan on the show was saying earlier, you know, that you've got to be very clear on your business objectives. And you've got to be very clear on your personal objectives. Because for a given objective you have, going and spending hours and hours with the technical team to understand a very nuanced point could be germane or applicable to what you need to get accomplished, but staying objective focused is going to help you, because you'll never know everything you don't know. And that's a challenge for everyone in life. Now, if it's a more of an existential level, that's something that everyone is challenged with. And you have to find peace with saying that I can never know what is like ultimately unknowable. So like you have to make decisions on a day-to-day basis of what's relevant and try to filter to the correct level of what do I need to get what I need done and no more and no less. Because being an effective part of the team is knowing what you're doing as part of the team and making sure you're executing it well. And that may change, is what I'm trying to say. It may change from situation based on what you're trying to get done. And that necessitates a different detail level at times.
I love that. No, I really, I think that's great. And I think Jonathan on the show mentioned this, which is that it's really about perspective. I completely agree, because yeah, there's going to be situations where I evaluate an objective or a task at hand, and to successfully accomplish that task, do I need to dive into, you know, the engineering team, potentially distract them from what they're doing so I could learn a little bit better? Does it really, you know, have that huge effect, or is it marginal? But then in the reverse situation, there will be times where, in order to execute even those non-technical tasks, having a deep understanding and involvement with the engineering team will be critical. And so I think it's kind of like you mentioned, it's going to come down to, you know, objective by objective, really assessing, what information and what actions are needed. And I think I'm going to get it wrong a lot of times. There's going to be a lot of times where I think, okay, I got to go bug the engineers. And it turns out everything they told me was not necessary at all to, you know, and it didn't make a difference. Whereas, you know, so I think the goal would be to kind of come up with strategies to really holistically evaluate what the objective is and understand, you know, what are the key items and, you know, information and skill sets that I need to accomplish it. And I think this is just something that I'm going to hopefully get better at over time.
Yeah. And I think it's important to emphasize what you just articulated too, as part of when we talk about being present in business. I just want to point out this perspective, because when you talk about objective to objective or moment to moment, it really then becomes a, how do I do my job better? Is how do I start to realize in a present way what I need in this moment, and not have this narrative that I'm a non-technical person, these are technical people. And if I'm, and like, that's a line that you have to hold throughout your relationship, regardless of context, because in reality, it's fairly amorphous. And like you just mentioned, for you to do your job well, being present and saying, in this moment, I need to become the technical person and they need to just give me information. And then the next moment, it may be different. But that's sort of breaking the narrative down a little bit, that you have to stay in your lane, or you would be wasteful, unequivocally or unilaterally in every situation, for you to get beyond a certain level of detail because you'd be wasting their time, when it really is situationally based. And I think, again, that's sort of that idea of being present in your role means that there's the lines are always a little less firm. And like you said, are you going to get it wrong sometimes? Yes, but that's your process. In your role and your contribution is balancing the use of your team's time effectively so that the company can get done what it needs to get done in any particular moment.
And when going back to that line of technical, non-technical, when we hear it, there's almost an implied value. You're ascribing a certain value to different knowledge that different people might have. And the danger of that is that it becomes about that knowledge gap, or the perceived knowledge gap that you have versus the knowledge the company needs in a given time, as Sam's saying. So that's why, like, we're honing in a little bit on that distinction, because if you look at the universe of objectives you have at this particular moment as a company, your relative knowledge in the technology is almost definitely not the most important factor, you know, and certainly not the universe of important activity. So like if the critical path includes FDA, the value of that is, you know, equal to any other items on the critical path.
Yeah. And I also completely realize that it's absolutely evolutionary, in the sense that, you know, if I go through these, you know, processes of evaluating, you know, objectives at a time, improving, you know, my understanding of what needs to be done, that information is going to naturally come as well. You know, you'll get better at deciding what information you need, and you'll get that information, and just sort of it will seamlessly enter my mind space, and I'll eventually pick up the technical content that I need, because I'm going to need it at times, and so it's going to happen. I think this is just also reflecting on just the pace of an early stage startup, feeling this need to, you know, consume as much as you can, to do as much as you can. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. Sort of taking it one objective at a time, maybe sometimes two objectives at a time, but kind of isolating them and understanding what, you know, what needs to be done will be huge. And then the other reason why I want to work on that and improve is because at some point I'm going to have to do that process for other people, you know, when our team gets bigger and they need that guidance on how to evaluate a task or objective at hand. And, you know, they're looking to the co-founder as, the leaders of the company as someone to kind of point them in the right direction. So definitely a critical skill set. I'm looking forward to continuing to develop.
And if you look at a lot of the, I'll use the term non-technical, you know, very hesitantly, because you have a PhD and MD, so like to the universe, you're pretty technical. But the reason why so many of them are successful being in the functional side of things is because that process, your learning process that you're describing, either between translating, you know, from the technical folks or explaining to the FDA or to a customer, even that learning is very, very valuable.
Yeah.
And they, having gone through that process, it's actually coming in with that gap or perceived gap actually becomes absolutely critical and very valuable to everybody else, because you'll have learned what that's like.
Yeah.
And you'll have learned when the line is wrong, you know, in the explanation. So even the mistakes you're talking about is part of what the company needs to evolve from.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, that as I continue to improve that, you know, let's just say that ability to translate, it has benefited the company in a number of different ways, especially the engineers, because, you know, as I started off this podcast, like, many people do not know what augmented reality is. And so if you have a conversation and people are kind of in the dark a little bit, unsure, you know, especially like a potential customer or user, the feedback you're getting is just, you know, is poor quality. And so, you know, over time, as I've kind of figured out how to translate from the engineers to the user, get that feedback, translate the feedback back to the engineers, it's been extremely valuable.
Yeah. I'm struck by, and it's like, as I mentioned, someone who has also been a Star Wars nerd, and nerd in many different respects. There was a bit on Sesame Street a while back called "One of These Things Is Not Like the Other." I don't know if they still have something like that, but it was usually to help children with shape, you know, figuring out shapes or et cetera. Mm-hmm. But there's the sense of drives us to do a lot of activity that is usually not the most valuable activity, because we're always trying to compensate for that. So, getting out of the head of being different really opens your, it takes away a lot of constraints, and it actually promotes you being able to provide a lot more value.
You are so right about that. And this is none of my, my co-founder or team members doing, this is all my own doing, you know, because I think one of the reasons I love working, you know, and building Hoth is that there is never pressure that you don't know something, or that there's never the sense that if you don't know something, it's a problem. Everyone is super supportive, but you're completely right. There are definitely plenty of times where, you know, I feel like, my lack of knowledge or skill sets in a certain area drives me to take certain actions that probably are unnecessary, either in the sense that I do something that, as, you know, Sam mentioned, does not drive the company as a whole forward, or just sort of waste other people's time. And that's, you know, I don't know, coping skills to, you know, continue to get over. I think that's like everyone in the world goes through that and deals with that. And, you know, I think it gets easier over time. And part of it is trusting your teammate. Part of it is, just trust that and seeing that the company is continuing to succeed and move forward despite you not doing a particular thing. But I completely agree, and I'm happy to admit that is definitely something I don't want to say struggle with, but, you know, does infiltrate my, you know, daily activities. The concept of, you know, I can't do this, thus I should do 10 times more than I, you know, necessarily.
Exactly. Need. But of course it's part of the dynamic. It has to be. You're human. It starts in grade school, you know, with cliques and populars and whatever. That's why I was saying the Star Wars, you know, element. Like, in other words, like this is our nature, you know, the sense of belonging or, you know, fitting in, et cetera. And that's why I'm suggesting just you have to really put that aside, because it drives a lot of unsustainable activity.
Yeah.
But that's why also coming back to what you want to be doing becomes very important, you know? So it's like in any relationship, there's one thing if you're doing something for someone else in a different way because they like it done in a different way, that's sustainable. But if you do something that someone else wants you to do that you don't even want to do, or you don't even think about whether or not you want to do it, that will never be sustainable. But worse, it doesn't pass a basic test, which is, would you look back on this time, if let's say Hoth, you know, the unlikely scenario that Hoth is unsuccessful, would you look back and say, I liked what I was doing? And if you can answer yes, then that's probably a good sign. Mm-hmm. But if what you're doing is based on the result, then it's probably a bad sign.
Yeah.
And I would just add to that, the last piece that you talked about, I just want to address the fact that when you're talking about trust and delegation, this is not a you issue. I would say this is 99% of people. This is a universal struggle. And the way I would describe it is, as a team grows, which is a very healthy and positive sign for a company, having to trust and delegate more is actually a loss of control, is what it feels like for most people. And like you said, when the sphere of activity increases, then the sphere of things that you can't possibly know at any given moment is also increasing. And that just generally puts people into a place where, whether they can articulate it or not, makes them feel like you're feeling. And you can manifest it like, oh, there's all this technical work I don't know, but you could just as well say, they could be saying there's all this like business facing work that we don't understand and they're feeling untethered. The one issue is technical people tend to be more heads down, and it's more culturally normalized that they don't have to pay attention to anything off their desk. So it kind of mitigates that loss of control. But what you're articulating is a very human instinct, which is that as your sphere of control goes down relative to the overall entity, you feel marginalized. And really, that's a lot of what we're combating. When you feel like I'm overstepping, or I don't know enough, or I don't do anything. And the way people combat that is like, just to, and we're kind of summarizing in a different way, is focusing on you first. Because when you're healthy and you know your sphere of control and you know what you're supposed to be doing on the team and you're fulfilling your role well, then your teammates have also a chance to be successful. But like, if you're worried beyond yourself, it's just going to scatter your attention and your energy. And that's where you start to get this tension that you're articulating.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I'm like, I'm not just saying that. This is fabulous advice. And even things, some of it is thoughts that I've had before, but sort of just articulating it or revisiting them have, you know, in a slightly different, you know, light, have been extremely helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and also then another practical dimension, you know, to move to more like, well, also here's additional tactical advice that we would give beyond, you know, sort of this existential, I guess, examination, is the communication and the building of transparency. Like when I start to articulate it as a sphere of activity growing and a general sense of loss of control, companies can and should combat that. So it's not just the, hey, you, Jonathan, need to combat that, you know, internally to yourself. Also, building passive transparency and better communication channels generally is what keeps companies together as they scale or as activity increases, even in a smaller group of people. And what I mean by that is, you pointed out earlier in the episode, the communication is so critical. So the one layer is knowing what needs to be communicated between people. But generally, a company that has a better sense of cohesion and transparency as passively as you can make it, like either that be passive updates on everyone's activity or just a general understanding of where the company is going as a whole, or just better ways to even happy hours, or just creating conscious channels where people are communicating the work and the progress that's being made, that helps the entity keep like a group consciousness, essentially, because then you're just more passively aware of what everything, of what all is happening, without that even needing to be like for a particular purpose or you feeling like you're bothering people. And so like, tactically speaking, anything that you can do from a business level that creates more passive transparency, passive communication, consolidates or makes communication more concise so that information can be traded quicker or more efficiently, that generally will support your company mission and combat universally that sense that everyone will feel of like loss of control, growing knowledge gap, because companies that don't get that under control, they will scale and they start to just function in different directions or like have a lot of trouble. So like, you're never going to have any, I guess what I'm trying to articulate is, you're never going to have any lack of return on investment and just investing in communication and more transparency generally.
I completely agree. And I think that's probably one of the things I think I could speak for Tyler as well, are most proud of as co-founders is the communication we and the team has. Not saying it's perfect, but either we have phenomenal communication, or in situations where we do run into, lapses in communication, we have, just a very efficient and streamlined process to be open with one another and solve it, be responsive, be adaptive. So that's definitely been, something first and foremost that, Tyler especially and I have tried to instill and just make very clear with, our team that we're very open, we're honest with each other. We genuinely like working with one another. Everyone should feel comfortable, explaining, speaking out loud, thinking through things together. So it's still a process we're getting better at. And you're right, as we, as we go from 4 customers to 40 and 2 types of products to 10, there'll be new challenges that arise, but I think we have a strong base at least right now where, the current team members do feel that they can be transparent and effectively communicate with one another.
And you can measure some of that transparency by seeing how much can everyone independently identify for themselves how they can best support everyone else and the company's mission, as opposed to needing to ask somebody, how can I support you? Because if that's a big orientation shift, because if the shift is how to support someone else, it assumes a certain lack of transparency as to that person's objectives.
That's really different great.
I
would almost be curious to speak with, each of our teammates and sort of pose that question, which is, what do you know about what I'm doing, and what do you think you can do to best support me? Which is, once again, full circle where this conversation started. Essentially I've been posing that question to myself. Even just having that conversation is a nice form of communication and a measurable way to evaluate it. I like that a lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah. I'm not going to do what I normally do and beat the dead horse there. So I'll let that sit.
I was going to say, I feel like we've covered the topic. How are you feeling, Jonathan, right now?
I feel good. No, it's nice because, sometimes you, especially like with the company, you speak just to people directly related to your company, whether it's a customer or a sales team. So to sort of kind of take a step back and speak about the company from the outside in, and also have, perspectives of people interpreting what I'm saying is really helpful. So I do really appreciate it. And I'm definitely going to, have some of these, action items in mind as I kind of hop on my next call after this. It'll be great.
Great. Well, it sounds like you had a good time then. So what we'll say is we'll close up for today. We just want to thank you again. Really appreciate you taking the time to having an authentic and open conversation with us. And if you or anyone you know or anyone listening has any questions, comments, or other people that you think would benefit from business therapy, please reach out. We'd love to hear from you. And other than that, everyone have a great week. Thanks again, Jonathan. And we'll talk to everyone next week.
All right, great. Thanks, guys. Have a great one.